Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, and welcome to the Paul Hastings, ICO's Pushing the Regulatory Frontier, ICO Case Studies for Good or Ill teleconference. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, for opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to David Hernan, partner in the Paul Hastings Los Angeles office. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to our latest installment of discussions concerning sales of digital tokens, sometimes referred to as initial coin offerings. I note that Bitcoin is now trading north of $8,500 for those of you trying to keep track of the skyrocketing currency. Now has a market cap exceeding $300 billion, and it's not just Bitcoin, but there are many other cryptocurrencies and tokens with massive market caps. I think some estimate that over $3.8 billion has been invested in ICOs to date, with virtually all of that activity occurring in 2017. So I think it's safe to say that we're in the midst of a frenzy, and it's with that frenzy, or sitting here in the midst of that frenzy, that today we're going to focus on what government actors and regulators are saying and doing in response to this frenzy, in response to the rise of Bitcoin and explosion of token offerings. We'll look at some specific case studies of issuers that have attracted scrutiny, because indeed it's from those case studies that we can learn, hopefully, the right way to proceed. So today we're joined by two of my colleagues, Nick Morgan, a partner in our SEC Enforcement and White Collar Litigation Group based in Los Angeles, and a former SEC enforcement attorney, and Dina Ellis Rockkind, enough counsel in our Washington, D.C. office in our government affairs practice, and one of the persons in Washington who's the most plugged in when it comes to Capitol Hill and the agencies and the White House as to what's going on in the financial regulatory sector. So let's start with Dina. Dina, why don't you provide us an overview of what you're seeing and hearing from the regulatory agencies and government officials in Washington about ICOs?
Sure. Thanks for the question. I started back in April meeting at a high level at the SEC. And the first thing I'd like to say is that the SEC, you know, now is led by Chairman Clayton. You've also got Mike Pillar and Kara Stein. But Senator Baldwin has dropped her concerns about the other two commissioners. So we're about to have a full commission with Hester Pierce, as well as Commissioner Jackson, as well at the SEC. The SEC dynamic, when you go to the 12th floor or you go to the leadership within the SEC, is that they have been very open to the notion of, you know, we need to encourage more capital formation and really take a look at our securities laws. The folks that worked at the SEC, Mike Pillar and Hester Pierce, as well as Kara Stein, were all staffers on Capitol Hill when we were working on the Jobs Act, which made it easier for companies to go private or to stay private or to go public. So they are all very sympathetic to crowdfunding, which really, initial coin offerings are a type of crowdfunding. So when you meet with, the commissioners or the commissioner staff, they really want a balanced approach. They want to encourage innovation. Their plan was to really enhance what had been done in the Jobs Act, but they also want to make sure that people aren't defrauded and that ICOs don't move too fast. So I think you're going to see this tension where the SEC continues to move forward with these enforcement actions, and it's really saying over and over, please you know, Jay Clayton saying over and over, please comply with U.S. securities laws. I think his statement on November 9th is very telling. He said, I have yet to see an ICO that doesn't have a sufficient number of hallmarks of the security. Moreover, there is also a distinct lack of information about many online platforms that list and trade virtual coins or tokens offered and sold in initial coin offerings. So I take from that, and this was an off-the-cuff remark, that he's saying, we're okay with ICOs, but in general, you're going to have to comply with U.S. securities laws. Lastly, I would say on the SEC is that in our meetings, they've been very open to, as they understand this market, to putting out either a concept release or a proposed regulation on the definition of a security. And then moving to the CFTC, the CFTC has been extremely active on ICOs and cryptocurrencies. We're also about to have five commissioners at the CFTC. SEC may happen this week. CFTC likely to happen after the Christmas or the holiday recess. Dan Berkowitz was just paired with Don Stump, so that'll likely happen next year. But the CFTC has been very forward-thinking. They have the CFTC lab that's looking at innovation and just put out a primer on cryptocurrencies. They've also approved Ledger X to be a cryptocurrency exchange that's operating it as a CEF for those of you in the derivatives world. The CFTC
and,
is
and
also...
Dina, it might be helpful just for the audience to explain the role that the SEC takes versus the CFTC historically.
Yeah, so historically, the SEC is, you know, regulates securities, and the CFTC regulates futures and derivatives. You know, there are many, my bias would probably be to put both of them together. I come from the banking committee, so all of you probably know what that means, but in general, that's the distinction between the CFTC and the SEC. And then the CFTC, to move on, is also allowing trading by the CME Group, CBOE Global Markets, and the Cantor Exchange. So CBOE Global Markets started trading cryptocurrencies on December 10th, and CME started yesterday. And the CFTC has also announced that's going to start regulating cryptocurrencies as a currency for retail, for the retail folks that are using those types of currencies. And lastly, the CFTC has put up a virtual currency resource page for those who, you know, retail investors who are interested in buying various types of coins. Going to the...
Dina, I just want to press on this a little bit more. So the CFTC presumably does not regulate transactions in U.S. dollars, right, or in euros. Is that right? And so what makes...
That's correct. They regulate. They regulate futures, derivatives, and swaps. So they are regulating various types of swaps and derivatives that are being created around cryptocurrencies, but they also regulate commodities, and they have found that various cryptocurrencies are a commodity just like any other commodity.
So like a futures contract in oranges, it might be a futures contract with respect to a currency and thus regulated by the CFTC.
That's correct. And then lastly, I think it's worthwhile to really focus on the administration. And when I say the administration, I mean not the independent agencies, but the Treasury, and just, you know, a little bit on the White House. So right now in the Treasury Department, you have a lot of focus on money laundering concerns and concerns about terrorist financing. The Treasury Department has been putting out, you know, new sanctions and on a fairly regular basis. The undersecretary who does the enforcement work of the Treasury has made very clear statements about FinCEN going after bad actors when it comes to, you know, money laundering or illicit finance. And then on the White House has made comments about that they are looking at keeping an eye on cryptocurrency because they've heard concerns from Homeland Security. So there's this other piece that's kind of overlaying what's going on in the SEC and the CFTC. CFTC and SEC, I think, are trying to find that proper balance to encourage innovation but also take out bad actors. When you get into the, you know, to the administration, their primary concern is we're concerned about illicit finance, money laundering, other types of illegal activity, national security.
So, Dina, that's a very helpful overview. It's quite a thicket to navigate for companies that are coming up with innovative products and figuring out whether it's something that is a security, a commodity, a future, whether it has national security implications. And we've addressed a number of those issues in prior calls. Nick, focusing just on the SEC, what does it mean when the SEC shows interest in your offering? What does that typically mean when all of a sudden they start looking at your offering?
Generally not a good thing, David, but you know, one of the nice things about having a ICO working group is that I get to hear the expertise of people like Dina and her perspective on the SEC at the commissioner level. My focus is more on the interest that the SEC pays to these things at the staff level, specifically the enforcement division. So if someone gets a phone call or a subpoena from the enforcement division and that's the way the SEC is taking an interest in their token offering, that's generally not such a good thing.
And so the cases that have been brought to date by the SEC, maybe you can walk us through those cases and what you glean from them as to what it means for issuers.
Sure. And you know, the SEC has lots of different ways that it can signal to the marketplace its policy prescriptions and thoughts. Enforcement actions are one such way. So to date, we've seen three enforcement actions that are directly on point, directly involving ICOs. There have been other related actions that are sort of around the periphery. And the three kicked off in September, the end of September, when the SEC filed a complaint in federal court in Brooklyn against an individual, Maxim Zaslavsky, who apparently had been the person behind, the principal behind two ICOs, Recoin Group and the Diamond Reserve Club. That case, not a lot of subtlety about it. It really is a fraud case. So essentially what the SEC did was look at the white paper and look at representations in the white paper that, about how money was going to be used, about the individuals purportedly involved in the token operation, and in other representations made to entice investors to buy tokens in the ICO. And then they compared those representations in the white paper to facts that they learned during their investigation. And according to their allegations, those representations were false. So they ran into court, actually on a pretty quick basis for the SEC. I mean, the white paper was posted in Recoin in July. The public sale began August 7th, and the SEC was in court September 29th. And on November 1st, in fact, Zaslavsky was arrested and criminally charged. So a pretty quick movement there by the SEC and the DOJ on the criminal side. So lessons learned there, you know, scrutinize any representations made to investors and make sure they don't deviate or differ from what is actually going on. The next case that the SEC brought was against a company called PlexCorp. It was an ICO that was, the principals were Quebecois, they were French, and again, this is somewhat similar, and the lessons learned are probably similar to the Zaslavsky cases in that it was a fraud case. It was filed December 4th. The ICO offering took place beginning in August. So again, fairly quick action by the SEC in coordination with the Quebecois securities regulators. And again, the focus of the case there was fraud. So the SEC looked at the white paper, various promotional materials on a company website, and on Facebook, representing things like returns of 1,354%, experts around the world, principal place of business in Singapore, and it looks as though it was pretty easy lifting for the SEC to look at those representations, compare it to what they were finding in their investigation, and then allege fraud claims against the company. So they ran into court and filed the complaint and obtained asset freezes and other remedies. So those first two cases, or I guess three cases, all were of a kind. They were fraud cases. Not a lot of analysis on whether a security existed, which for many folks in this space is the most interesting legal issue. So fortunately, I guess for us, if we're interested in this, the development of the law around this area, on December 11th, the SEC brought its third and, as far as I know, final to date action against an ICO principal in the Munchie case. So many of the people listening to this call will already have read the Munchie case, but a couple of interesting things about it that set it apart from the two prior cases. One is there are no fraud allegations. There were no civil penalties imposed. This is an administrative cease and desist order requiring that Munchie cease and desist from offering its tokens. So a very different kind of case. It's not filed in federal court. The remedies imposed are pretty light. And in fact, it looks like it was fairly quick to put together for the SEC. They ascertained that the Munchie offering involved securities. The Munchie folks had only raised a few thousand dollars and voluntarily stopped their offering and returned money to investors. And so in that scenario, the SEC was able to put together pretty quickly this administrative order, and I think really sending a signal that, A, the SEC is going to bring cases involving non-fraud allegations, involving small dollar amounts, in order to send a message, and B, if a company returns funds, cooperates, the punishments will be fairly light. So I think that's really the lesson learned from the Munchie case. There is a very useful analysis of the Howey issue. In other words, is the token a security or not? And interestingly, Munchie purportedly conducted its own Howey analysis prior to the launch of its ICO and concluded no security was involved. The SEC disagreed, and so for anyone who hasn't read it, I commend you to read the SEC's order because it provides a pretty clear pathway or understanding of the SEC's thinking on when what the issuers believe to be a utility token is, in the SEC's view, a security. So that's probably the most interesting takeaway from the Munchie case, David.
And Nick, why do you think to date the SEC has taken a relatively light hand when it comes to enforcement?
So it's certainly, if you were Mr. Zaslavsky or the principals in the Plex Core cases, they would disagree with that assessment, that it was a light hand. But I get your point. They haven't brought dozens and dozens of cases, and at least as to one case, the Munchie case, the penalties involved were very light. So I think it goes back to what Dina was saying earlier on the call, and that is the SEC is in a learning mode, and it does not want to be viewed as overreacting here and trying to shut down the entire space. Clearly, there are many ICO offerings that are complying with federal securities laws, and I think the prevailing mindset, at least at the commission level at the SEC, is that we need to be careful that we don't inadvertently adversely impact those ICO companies that are operating within the bounds of the law, which if the SEC overreacted, could certainly have a chilling impact like that.
We see a lot of ICO white papers and offering documents that will state on their face that what is being sold is not a security, and it's something else. Usually there's some characterization. Why isn't that enough to fend off the SEC?
Great question, and the SEC